We'll stand at ease for just 1 second. Back to order.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank the people here that are willing to testify and be on the record today. I'd like to thank my committee for their diligence in providing the documentation that I asked of them in a timely fashion, so that everyone is aware. What we have done in this committee is we've asked each member to submit a one-page document outlining their concerns for the election process and what we can do as a committee to get ahead of the curve and not have situations occur in Oregon like we've seen happen in the state of Florida and the state of Washington most recently. The committee has indulged me and provided extensive recommendations. This is an opportunity for us to talk about the agenda of the committee, but what the committee is going to be doing over the month of February and March to implement some of these suggestions. This will also be an opportunity for you out there to talk with us, and if you're going to testify today, what I would ask of you is I don't want examples of things that are going on at this point in time. That'll be a later meeting. I would like specific questions that you would like the committee to address. We will not have answers. But if you have specific things that you want this committee to explore during the course of our analysis of the situation as is, please present that. We'll note it, and we will be more than happy to explore those suggestions. At this time, I would like to discuss the proposal of the chair to the committee to travel statewide for what is going to be a series of official committee meetings. These will not be town halls. These will be official meetings. We are proposing currently the representative from Canby, Representative Scott, in light of his new appointment to the co-chair position on Ways and Means, will not be utilizing the State and Federal Affairs Committee their ability to travel statewide. The co-chair has graciously given this committee his two travel meetings. So this committee will then have four as opposed to two. It's my understanding we are the only committee that has been indulged in that fashion, and I would like to publicly thank the co-chair, Representative Scott, for that. With that being said, I would like to make as much use of those four meetings that we have. I would actually like to squeeze in two meetings per travel date. The current proposal, and Cletus, correct me if I'm wrong, please, the current proposal is to go to Medford and Grants Pass in the same day, and Redmond and Bend in the same day, Heppner and Pendleton in the same day, and Newburgh and Lincoln City in the same... I'm sorry?
McMinnville.
And Lincoln City in the same day. Those will be the paid for, I guess, the subsidized. I'm asking this committee to indulge the chair and conduct an official meeting in the metro area as well. This will not be an overnight stay. It's not in the budget, but I would ask the indulgence of the committee. If that is not appropriate, I can schedule one of the official meetings to be there. I would prefer, since it's so close, that the committee just simply opt to travel there, and we would have one meeting official in the metro area. Those are the proposed meetings. Representative Greenlake.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, two things about the dates. From a personal perspective, this schedule would take me out of town on a birthday that's divisible by 7, 10, 5, and a variety of other things. I'm not sure my family will appreciate that model. Also, the 19th...
Did you say by 7 and 5?
By 7, 5, 10.
Oh. I was thinking it was 35 there for a second, Representative.
Right? You're half right.
I am.
The 19th, also, just to alert you, is the Saturday of spring break in the school system in Oregon, and frequently is not a great time to be trying to hold public things where it's the beginning of a lot of folks being out of town.
Representative, what was your birthday that you were...
I'm worried about the 12th particularly, but the 19th, the 18th, 19th has the second problem.
Okay, the spring break issue?
Yeah, first week of spring break, which might cause some members for, and other members of the public, that may be a difficult day to get folks to come.
I will note that, and I will talk with you after committee on those concerns.
Oh, all right, then. On my own, I can just ask for an excused absence that day.
And the chair would probably excuse your absence.
Chair Kitt?
Representative Farr.
I may also point out that March 4th and 5th and 6th is Dorchester weekend, which many of us have already made commitments.
Okay. See why we have these meetings?
Jeez. I don't have that on my schedule.
No, what is that? What, is that some strange ritual?
Too many Republicans there.
No different than the Oregon Summit.
Right. Those of us that aren't going to Dorchester can sort of,
as long as we can run the committee at that point in time, I'm sure that...
As long as we can get a quorum to do that.
And Representative Greenleg, I might also add that March 5th is my birthday.
Ah, there you go. There you go.
Is it divisible by 7, 10, and 5?
You may have some people. No, hers is not.
No. If you add those three numbers together, that's
hers. Hers is only divisible by 1.
Okay. We will take under advisement these concerns. Now, realizing that we are not going to be able to accommodate everybody, and also realizing the importance of these meetings, I would hope that when we set the final schedule that the committee makes the appropriate actions and makes it a priority to attend these meetings, although the chair will obviously work with any of the committee members, realizing that we may not be able to accommodate everybody at every meeting. Representative Mark.
Yes. Well, would you mind repeating the potential locations that you were considering and maybe put some input in there?
Heppner Pendleton,
okay,
for our Eastern Oregon swing, Bend and Redmond for our Central Oregon, Medford and Grants Pass for Southern Oregon, McMinnville and Newburgh.
Newburgh and McMinnville.
I don't know. That's not right.
They're right.
We're
next
supposed
to
go to the coast.
Yeah.
The coast.
I think it's Newport.
Newport and Lincoln.
It's Newport, I think.
All right, McMinnville and Newport.
It appears that my committee administrator is contradicting me in front of everybody on the record.
Oh, boy. That's a bad idea.
Well, that's all right. I just want to get a general geographic idea.
It should be the coast. Newport, McMinnville is my recommendation, along with, and those will be the travel dates.
Right.
That will be official travel dates, along with indulging the chair to have a metro area meeting as well, that will also be an official meeting. It just there'll be no state funds to subsidize per diem or not per diem, excuse me, but travel expenses, etc. So you'd be required to drive yourself there. Representative Holby.
Chair Kitt, I have I don't think any conflicts with any of those dates for your information, but
okay.
Newport and McMinnville seems like a pretty good stretch apart there. Mm-hmm. Not questioning your idea of the places. I just thought they were a little ways away.
Okay. Appreciate that. Anything else relating to the locations, of the proposed locations, other than what Representative Holby has already mentioned?
I think I had mentioned to you that if it was possible, we do Bend and either Prineville or Madras. That would put us into a different county besides Deschutes. And the other thing I just might assist in the Far Eastern travels is when I was in 01, I was on Rules Committee, and we traveled to Pendleton, and there happened to be an Oregon National Guard plane that was headed that way, and we were able to catch a ride both ways. So it might be something to look into.
Now you'd end up in Iraq if you do that.
Well, that's fine now.
If there's any other concerns, if there's no other concerns on the dates or the locations, I will move forward with that, other than the concerns that have already been noted. Great.
Sure.
Representative Holby?
Did I hear you that we may also do some town halls in perhaps the Portland metro area and perhaps Eugene?
Yes. The chair would like to conduct a series of town halls with his members in various locations that are obviously relevant to your district or any other member's district that would like input on the rules and elections. I think it's a very important topic. So this chair is willing to go anywhere that any member wants to hold a town hall. I'm more than happy to go there in conjunction with them. This is not a partisan issue, so obviously I don't care if it's Republican or Democrat. I think it's just an issue that needs to be addressed statewide. So anybody that, and I will be sending out a memo on that, if you can note that. I'll be sending out a memo to all members that if they're interested in holding a town hall with me as the chairman of this committee with dealing with this topic. Now, I don't want to get into school funding. I don't want to get into everything else. It's this topic alone. I want to keep it very, very focused on that. Seeing no further questions on the locations and the dates, I have the information currently that the committee has given to me being assembled into what I'm hoping to narrow down to four or five big topics that we can all agree on, trying to take recommendations from each of the committee's committee members' list of recommendations. So that will be coming probably this week to you. So be checking for either hard copy or email. That being said, I know we have some people that would like to speak on the record and make recommendations to the committee on specific items that they would like this committee to address. I would ask that you limit your speaking privilege to 4 minutes per person. And I will gavel that down just to keep some consistency with the meeting. So it's not to be rude. It's just in order, a matter of time constraints. Do we have the sign-up sheet that I can... Oh, I'm sorry. So at this time, I would like to please call forward Ruth Pendle.
This meeting has...
Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Ruth Bendel. I live at 10980 Southwest Muirwood Drive, Portland 97225. I think the most important thing that I would like this committee to ask some serious questions of all election staff is the importance of having one uniform system across the state for all counties in how they treat voter registration, particularly as we're coming to a centralized system. Our Constitution, the Oregon Constitution, says that anyone registering to vote must be a citizen, must be a resident of that area, and also must be 18 years or over. And to that, I would like to point out that Arizona has already put a bill in effect that enforces those requirements. And in enforcing those requirements, I would like you all to consider the contents of our voter registration applications and think in terms that those registration applications themselves need to have some different questions, questions that mirror the questions that are asked in a passport application. Are you a citizen born where born, or citizen by naturalization? What date and the naturalization certificate number? I'd like to think in terms of being able to track this. We're in a post 9/11 era in which we must be concerned as to who is doing what and where they're doing it. And at least if questions are asked even on the voter registration application, not just proof of ID, but proof of eligibility, general eligibility, that's not discriminatory. We have to be eligible to do things. Those are the things that I'd like to see in effect in all counties, and that people who do not meet those requirements, if they're going to get a ballot, it should be provisional. So that, and provisional means that until it's being checked out that you are eligible to vote wherever it is, that you do not have that vote counted. And the other thing that I would like you to look at very, very seriously is the way vote by mail is being treated in terms of, is it really what the intent of the voters was, that when they voted by mail, their ballots would be subjected to scrutiny, opened, subjected to scrutiny, and removed from the secrecy envelope days before the election, and the intent of the voters would be determined not even by supervisors, not even by election supervisors, but by election boards whose backgrounds are not known, whose agendas are not known, and who then get the liberty of deciding what is the voter intent.
I would ask that you please don't question the people that are counting the ballots, and I'm not inferring that you are, but again, I want people to come with specific suggestions of things that they want this committee to address.
And what I'm saying is that we spent a lot of money on the voting machines, the federal government has, and in the past a ballot was subjected to the tally machine, and then only afterwards, if it was rejected by the tally machine, was anything determined about voter intent. And I think that should apply in terms of how we handle ballots in the future. None of this business of early opening or any of that. And lastly, how observers are treated in poll watchers are treated, that they are given the access that they need to do the poll monitoring job that is the function of every citizen that wants to be concerned. I thank you very much for listening.
Does the panel have any questions? Seeing none, thank you for keeping it within the 4 minutes. I appreciate you being here. I will now call Sharon Cornish. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Sharon Cornish, P.O. Box 312, Hillsboro, Oregon, 97123. I live north of the city on Evergreen Road. A girlfriend and I went around to libraries, DMV, post office, and even in our administration building in Washington County. And we do not have a uniform registration blank. Everywhere we went, it was different, depending on the year. This is a 2000. This is a 2004. They're all over.
Annetta, would you mind grabbing those documents? I'd like to look at them.
The one up in the administration building available to the public was 1999. The current 2004 registration, I've highlighted it, you don't have to prove citizenship. You just have to mark the box, yes or no. And if you mark the box no, you don't vote. If you mark the box yes, it doesn't prove anything. If you look down farther, it doesn't require proof of ID. It requests proof of ID when you're filling out a new registration. It's too lenient. Now, we went before the county commissioners with our fears a whole week before election. We had 5 meetings with them, public meetings. They turned to their attorneys, and the attorneys gave them a legal letter of opinion, and we got copies of it. And everything they say is true. It's all laws. They quote all the laws. They quote local laws. They quote federal laws. They
Sharon,
quote everything.
So other than a uniform registration, what other suggestions would you make?
Well, they're not. The process isn't doing the laws.
So what process?
I mean, all the attorneys are quoting the laws, but our election process is not doing what the laws state. And that's why we have almost 4,000 provisional ballots that we talked about in the last committee in Washington County.
Right. Well, thank you so much. It appears your time is up. So I have from you a uniform registration and a law enforcement for...
And I want strict words. Require.
Require. Thank you so much for being here today. That'd be great. Cappy Eaton? Am I saying that correctly? Thank you.
Chair Kitts, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cappy Eaton. I'm the governance coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. There are some process things that I would like to bring to your attention. I think it's very important that you go out and talk to people about the elections process. I think it's equally important that the communities where you're going are well notified that you're coming, when you're coming, where you're going to be, that there is ample parking, ample seating. In other words, those amenities that can just wreck a good thing. We think it's very important that you go out. I think you need to ask the people some questions as well as they're suggesting things to you about how they feel about the process. How
Cappy,
do they?
One second, appears Representative Dalton has a question.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Oh, I just before you got too much further into that, I wanted to know if you had any advice about what might constitute sort of proper notice, so that we can have some guidance on that. Did you have some suggestions?
Well, sometimes when committees have gone out, maybe there's been 24 or 36 hour notice about the fact you were going to come to a community. That's not sufficient. And certainly, I would say to all of you, if you're going to your communities or your districts, that you could ask citizen support. For instance, if we have leagues in those areas, we would ask that our people come to those hearings. But try to get notices in the newspaper, try to get notices on the TV stations. Whatever you can do to encourage people to come and talk to you, I think, is very important. But you can't just do it 24 hours ahead of time.
Representative Dalto and Cappy, to address that question, as you heard earlier today, we're trying to put together the exact dates and locations
exactly.
As we speak. And that's for March, so they're going to have weeks notice
and that's
and reminders.
Very good.
So, and I appreciate that. But just so you know, the committee has heard that concern, and we're doing everything we can to make sure that concern is addressed.
I think you should ask people who come how they feel about the system. How is it working? Are they having problems when they go out on voter registration drives with the forms that have been brought to your attention? The new 2004 voter registration form is one which is pretty much dictated by the Help America Vote Act, what had to be on that form. I happen to serve have a steering committee, and that form dictated what exactly had to be on that form. So that's something you might want to take a look into. And one further suggestion, that after you've been out in the hinterlands, when you come back to Salem, it would be helpful if you had a public hearing to talk about what the issues were, that not just in your committee, but an opportunity to bring forward the kinds of things that people were talking about when you were out there. Voting is extremely important, and we want to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to vote and has access to voting. And that's looking at the voting machines for the disabled. That's another issue you might want to be talking about. And I certainly would hope you would take the opportunity to invite the county clerks who are in the places where you are to come forward with questions that they have.
The county clerks, just to answer that, and I thank you for your testimony. Your time has expired. The county clerks will be here February 8th. All of them, all 36, are invited to be here. They have their convention here.
Yes.
Along with the Secretary of State, so it should be a great meeting.
Thank you
for coming. Dan Meek, please come.
Good
welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope you and the members will pardon my informality, but I spilled coffee all over my tie on the way here. I would like to ask...
Was it hot coffee from McDonald's?
No, it was lukewarm coffee from my own coffee pot.
Okay.
I would like to ask the committee during the session to scrutinize...
Dan, if you could say your name and address for the record, please. I'm sorry.
My name is Dan Meek, M-E-E-K, and my address is 10949 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland, Oregon.
Thank you.
I would like to ask the committee to scrutinize the Secretary of State's administration of the initiative and referendum process in many regards. But let me just give you an example of where he needs scrutiny. Today I testified at a rulemaking hearing of the Secretary of State where the office there...
Dan, I don't mean to cut you off, but again, you're going to have that opportunity. This meeting is specific things that you would like to see this committee address. And if the rulemaking process by which the Secretary of State makes rules is that, then we're more than happy to do that. This is not the time, for example, so if you could just keep within the parameters that we set, I would appreciate it.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I'm a bit confused about the parameters. What I was going to express is that the proposed rules would, in my view, destroy the initiative process for grassroots organizations and for the opportunity to collect signatures using volunteers. And if that's not within the parameter of the committee, then I won't make the presentation.
No, just specific recommendations of the committee would be great.
My recommendation would be that the committee not allow the secretary to adopt such rules. In the legislature itself only has one sentence governing the signature of circulators on petitions. It simply says in ORS 250.045, subsection 7, the circulator shall certify on each signature sheet of the initiative or referendum petition that the individual signed the sheet in the presence of the circulator and that the circulator believes each individual is an elector. The Secretary of State is now proposing to implement that with several pages of single-spaced text that implement such rules as if a circulator, and this is not the voter, each signature sheet can have up to 20 voter signatures, and then it's also signed by the circulator at the bottom. So even if the sheet has 20 perfectly valid voter signatures, all those valid voter signatures are discarded if the circulator's signature and date does not meet the scrutiny of the Secretary of State. He's proposing a rule that states that if the circulator makes any slip of the pen in writing the date on the circulator's signature, that signature sheet is irretrievably flawed and cannot be in any way resurrected, and all 20 valid voter signatures on that sheet are permanently discarded. So if you're collecting signatures and it's maybe June 1st, then you're in your mind it's still May 31st. We all do this when we write checks. And if you start writing 05 and think that it's June 1st, I'm going to change that 5 into a 6, then all of the signatures on that sheet are disqualified under the Secretary of State's new rule. In addition, if you cross out the date and put in a new one, that is only recognized if the circulator signs the petition again, but there is no place on the signature sheet for a second circulator signature. There are many of these instances in his proposed rules where the only people who will be able to validly collect signatures will be professionals, and even they will have a very difficult time in following these rules. In addition, there's another new rule. The signature of the circulator must be legible. Well, there's no such requirement on the signature of a voter, and I've seen tens of thousands of voter signatures that consist of nothing more than something that looks like a check mark or a straight line. Look at your own signature and those of your colleagues and ask yourself how many of those are legible, how many of those spell out the name of the person who signs. But that's the new requirement under the Secretary of State's proposed rule, and it's a very subjective requirement, what is legible and what isn't. In addition, he's proposing a new, extremely vague rule that states the petition signature sheet will be rejected, and that means all of the voter signatures, for insufficient circulator certification if for any other reason from the face of the signature sheet the circulator's identity cannot be determined. The word identity is never defined. Or otherwise it cannot be determined that the circulator witnessed the elector's signatures. Well, There's no way from looking at the face of a signature sheet that you can tell that the circulator witnessed the elector's signatures. This is a blanket opportunity to disqualify any sheet that the Secretary of State, exercising his discretion, decides that he wishes to disqualify. These are the sorts of issues that I very much wish the legislature to scrutinize and get involved in so that the initiative process is not pushed into the condition where only professional signature gatherers can satisfy the rules. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate those suggestions, and this committee will take them under advisement. Mark Luca.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Luca, and I just want to say that some of you may recognize me from around the building. I'm not appearing here on behalf of any legislator or on behalf of the political party that I formerly worked for. But the testimony that I'm about to give is testimony that comes out of my work for the Republican Party as the field director for the Willamette Valley region during the last election, and was partially part of my responsibilities was to monitor the election integrity for the seven counties that I had jurisdiction over. And I also want to say, excuse me, by way of disclaimer, that nothing in my testimony should be construed as to impugn the motives or integrity of any person or any political party. And it's predicated on the fact that our elections, I believe, are a national security issue at this point, that somebody compromising the our elections process could affect the balance of power in this country, and it's a critical thing, and I really appreciate the fact that this committee is taking this up this year. My first suggestion would be to shore up the handling of military ballots, and more specifically, military ballots are currently, my understanding is that they're color-coded differently when they're received, and I think that that would potentially give rise to suspicion as to how they are handled. I know that in the county that I was monitoring, the military ballots were not counted. They were saved in case there was a a recount later that they could possibly affect the outcome of.
So, Mark, the recommendation, and again, I appreciate your stories, and this is just not the time for that. So your recommendation to this committee is to look at the way the state is handling the military ballots.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
To look into whether or not the colors are the same, and if they're not the same, are you recommending to the committee that they be the same?
I'm not going to make a recommendation to that. I'll leave that up to the judgment of the committee. Just to say that it could potentially be an issue that needs to be looked at by the committee, in my opinion. Also, as to the timing of the sending out of military ballots to allow enough time for the soldiers who receive those ballots to get them back on time. Also, as was stated in earlier testimony, the ability of the Secretary of State's office to legislate and regulate elections by rule should be looked at, and also to clean up the verification of registration. Just to reiterate, there is no requirement for identification if the voter registration is dropped off at the clerk's office, regardless of the number of registrations that are dropped off at any one given time. A person can drop off 100, 500. Our party dropped off 6,000 in one day, and there's just no control over that.
So again, you're reiterating Ms. Bendel's
right.
concern about the citizenship issue and the verification
right.
of, as I think that
and then,
Sharon as well.
I'll just put a period on my testimony just with a real brief anecdotal evidence that was called into me by a person in Yamhill County who said that there was a paid party canvasser out registering illegal aliens to vote. And when confronted, the person said, well, they have as much right to vote as you do, which, of course, is not the case. And in another instance, the person turned to two people who were in line in the county clerk's office and said, you know, you have to be a citizen in order to register to vote. Those three people left. And my specific problem with that is that they would not have been challenged by the county clerk. So that should be tightened up as well. And I thank the committee for taking up the issue.
Thank you so much. And we'll look forward to hearing from you also at a later date on some of the other issues and the testimony and examples that you have. I don't mean to cut off anybody or have the appearance of being rude to anybody. This committee meeting is just designed for that sole purpose of suggestions of specific things to look at. So if we can just keep it to that, it'd be great. Now call Kevin Hoare, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kevin Hoare, 12563 Northwest Milford Street, Portland, Oregon, 97229. And there's really one main issue I want to speak to relating to a message I received from a Marine colonel who was stationed at Camp Fallujah prior to the election. And he had sent me an email because he had received two ballots. And he was concerned on two counts. One was that he had not only received two ballots, which at that time was due to the presence of Ralph Nader on one ballot and not on the other, in the ongoing court case that related to that, but the fact that as a Marine colonel, he had access to getting that information, but so many other soldiers from Oregon did not have access to email and could not get those answers. So one of my specific suggestions is to set up something so that the in today's modern era of email, at a minimum, there's a way that soldiers can get this information easily. People who are fighting and dying on the front lines, and as we saw, successfully helping people who have never voted before to vote, that they will actually get that opportunity and be able to get that information quickly and expeditiously and accurately, whether it be from the state of Oregon or from the county elections office. He asked me what to do, and I fortunately had been paying attention to the news here and knew and told him what to do. The second thing is, and this is probably to avoid a problem in the future, is I think that it makes a lot of sense to look at how successful we were at getting military ballots back from remote locations. Again, for the same reason that these folks are out there, men and women, risking their lives, they get a ballot. Did they get it soon enough before the election? Did they get it back to us? Was it counted, or was it thrown away? I think this is a special case. Compared to all other voters, these voters probably face some of the most severe obstacles that you can imagine because they're sitting in, you know, a foxhole covered in mud, worried about whether an improvised explosive device is going to get them. They managed to fill out a ballot. We should know whether that made it back. I don't want to see what happened is actually happened, as we've seen in Washington State, with ballots that did not make it back in time and quite clearly can make a difference in an election.
Kevin, thank you for your suggestions, and I think that the committee would be in agreeance that to ensure the voter integrity of our military men and women is probably priority one. So thank you for bringing that forward.
Thank you.
Jim Ellison?
My name is Jim Ellison, a citizen living at 16154 Northwest Kinderwood Way, Portland, Oregon, 97229. And I want to thank Chairman Kitts and the other members of the committee for giving me these few minutes to address you. You asked me to pose things, or all of us to pose things as a question. So my question is, would you agree that the state of voting in Oregon is in somewhat of a state of chaos? You've heard all these issues, and I endorse everything that's been said at this point in time. And my question is, I hope you agree that... or do you agree that that is a serious problem? But I would ask you, as you're thinking about revamping, to consider the idea of a voter ID card that's somewhat like a bank card. My bank knows instantly the minute I take a dollar or two or a hundred out of my account. And they make note of it, and of course the records are kept very accurately by the bank. The magnetic strip, the PIN number, signature on the back is all there if necessary. But if I could ask you, would you think about voting somewhat like a bank account? Or in a given election cycle, each voter is given one vote per issue, per candidate, to draw upon to make their intentions known. So in other words, in a given election cycle, you set it up like a bank does with my money, and let the voter draw upon that vote, and when it's withdrawn, it's gone. I mean, it's used. The voters made their intention known. And I know if this is advanced, I'm going to guess you will probably hear that there's a cost issue. Certainly, initially there would be a cost issue, but I would ask you if you could ask the county elections officers and other legislators and this body and the Senate to think about the long-term cost-benefit relationships. Initially, the cost may be horrendous relative to current cost. But over the long term, and as a poll watcher in Washington County, and speaking to the good citizens who work there as employees, the cost of handling each paper ballot is horrendous. Amortized over a period of a few years, I'm certain this kind of a voting card, where the citizen can vote by drawing against their voting bank, so to speak, and make their intentions known that way, and once it's used, it's used. It can only be used one time. So I appreciate you considering my comments, and I hope I posed them appropriately as questions.
They were so, and you're right on time. So you're proposing vote by ATM and not vote by mail.
Exactly.
That's an interesting concept.
That'd be AVM.
AVM.
There you go.
Representative Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ellison, thank you for your input. It's one of the concerns I have about the vote by ATM model is having a paper trail of that vote. Have you given any thought to that? And then I've got a follow-up, too.
Yes, Representative March, I have. Sadly, I don't have one with me. I didn't make a withdrawal today. But when I make a withdrawal, there is a paper trail. I get a receipt telling me I either took money out of or put money, or I could say I used my vote or I didn't use my vote in my voting account. And another thing about my ATM machine where I frequently go, there's a camera there watching to see that no funny stuff goes on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And for voter ID, if one ever wanted to go back and look at a picture of an individual, we all have a picture on our driver's license. I don't know if we're willing to go that far in the process of identifying voters, but the fact is, if you think in cost-benefit relationships and think about amortizing the initial cost over a long period of time. I used to work for a major financial institution, and we often sold Oregon State bonds. I don't anymore. I'm retired. So there's no conflicts of interest here, and I won't tell you who I work for. The point is,
I just want your PIN number.
You can't have it.
Thank you.
The money you're talking about.
So, I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Thank you. And the follow-up was,
I was going to say float a bond issue.
Okay. like I say, I'm glad to get your input in this. How did you come to hear about this hearing?
Through Ruth Bindle, and then this morning Representative Kitts invited us to come in.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Chair, I didn't realize we were going to have time for citizen testimony today, and had I known that, I would have certainly invited a few of my constituents. So in the future, if we can pass that information out to other members of the committee, I'd really, really appreciate it.
Representative March, I appreciate that comment, and it's duly noted. I will tell you, there is no conspiracy there. I thought I had a meeting today with two people regarding this issue. 20 Oregonians showed up. They're not my constituents. They're from all over the state. And in light of the time, I said everything that you're mentioning here is something the committee would probably want to hear so that I would, because they made the effort to come all the way down here, I said, why don't you come to the committee today, and I'll indulge you for exactly the parameters that I've outlined. I'm more than happy to we passed the 48-hour deadline for Thursday's meeting, but if the representative would like meeting on Tuesday for the same purpose, I'm more than happy.
We just want to set some parameters.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you.
And I said I was speaking as a citizen, nonpartisan, interested in voter integrity, that I would think every Democrat, every Republican, every Independent, every Libertarian, every Green Party might be interested in.
Absolutely. Thank Representative Greenlee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do need to note that the last two people are my constituents. So my constituents managed to stay on top of things.
Yes.
Very happy to welcome you here.
Okay.
One of the criticisms that I heard about voting in other states where there were electronic voting machines,
mm-hmm.
I think some were made by Diebold, that's made many of the ATM,
mm-hmm.
is the worry that it's possible to hack into those systems and there's no way to know whether somebody really is. You know, it can have one program in the morning and a different program by 8 o'clock at night by having that switched. I know I pay pretty close attention to my bank records and save certificates, and I have found errors in them, and I don't necessarily trust they all go in my direction. Do you have concern about the question of the same question that I hear raised by many of my constituents also? Worry about that.
Representative Greenlick, as I said, I work for a major financial corporation, and I'm familiar with the company Diebold, follow their stock, and I'm aware of their equipment and their processes. And quite frankly, I think they've proven to be very accurate and very consistent. In my own financial statements, I've found no errors probably in the last, I can't think of the last time I found an error. The major company I work for, none of my accounts ever had an error in 9 years. I found one error one time. It was one penny off. They corrected it the next day before I found it. The only reason I know is they corrected it before I did. So my point is that the technology is pretty good about keeping track of things. I might point out the level of education might have something to do with people's inability to do this. I notice the state of Oregon has gone to a debit card system for welfare payments and food stamps. So my point is that people that may even be in the lower level of our socioeconomic strata.
Come back away from the mic a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Feedback. Even citizens who may be in the lower level of our socioeconomic strata have learned how to use equipment. Cards for food stamps. In other words, they go into wherever their favorite grocery store is and they swipe the card. Debit is made against their monthly funds available, and apparently accounts are kept very well. So maybe we could look at how the food stamp people handle it, even with people with minimal education or minimal or on the lower level of our socioeconomic status.
If I can follow on. It turns, with just a comment, I don't think that people who are my constituents are an issue of education. It turns out some of the most technically sophisticated ones,
I'm one of them, by the way,
are the ones who are most worried about the issue of maintaining the integrity of those systems, hacking into it and changing it. I mean, that is where the concern is coming from. It is coming from the highly technical people.
I appreciate your saying that.
Our neighborhood has a lot of people with a lot of technological.
Mr. Ellison, I appreciate your comments. And at a later time, if we want an agenda item of vote by ATM and vet out the security issues at that time,
thank you.
More than happy to do that as well. Thank you. Sure. Thanks for your comments. Are there any other people that are wishing to testify on the record for suggestions to this committee at this time? Seeing no. Oh, yes, please. You could state your name and address for the record.
My name is David Buchanan. I'm the state chair of Oregon Common Cause. Common Cause has worked on election issues for 30 years. What I have is kind of a suggestion, and that is that in presenting the ideas of some specific detailed problems, it's probably, I think, would facilitate the process to start with a kind of a wide view of what the processes are. From what I've heard, it seems to me that there are kind of three categories. One that we heard a couple of suggestions on was the initiative process, how it starts from the filing signatures, getting certified, all those kinds of threads of the process, make a continuum. And sometimes if you want to change one detail, it tends to disbalance some of the rest of the process. So a first view and wide screen of the whole process, I think, would facilitate seeing where some of the individual small-scale issues could fall. Besides the initiative process, which is probably going to provoke several dozen legislative proposals this session, I think there are a couple of other main issues. The one, the main one dealing with the elections process, I actually think of as two ends of the same process, registration and voting, vote by mail. And oftentimes people who think of a problem with vote by mail, it's actually a problem with registration. So to think of that as kind of a continuum of how it begins, where the citizen first interfaces with a registration card, all of the steps in that process, and then the steps when the government responds by providing a ballot, and then the ultimate of counting those ballots and certifying elections. So that's another very long thread that has a lot of specific details within it. So, and again, I've seen some specific issues that making a change here throws off something further down the line in terms of how the process works. So my suggestion is that to provide kind of a broad picture and then use that to facilitate isolating where the specific issues are at various points in the process. So I think that you have those several big scale issues that if that picture were clear, then it would make it a lot easier to identify some of the specific steps along the process. So that's my suggestion for
appreciate
your committee.
Thanks for being here today. I do appreciate everybody being willing to come down and spend their time down here in the Capitol. Some of us are elected to do it. You choose to do it, and it's greatly appreciated. So with that, I'd like to thank the committee for their indulgence. Yes.
Can I please just make a comment?
Absolutely.
As you know, I really strongly support our attempt to move forward and to look at this election systems. But it really, I've not seen any evidence in my looking at the system that we have a system in chaos, as we hear testified. I think the issue is when we get to elections like the current Washington election, where somebody's elected governor by a couple hundred votes out of several million, we just need to make sure we're fine-tuning things and we're looking for the problems. And I do think looking at the larger view and figuring out where we are and then finding ways to make sure the security of the system and the validity of the system and the integrity of the system is intact is a great idea. But I'm not propelled by a sense of panic about our voting system. I think we do mostly a pretty good job. But the margin of error is getting very, very small when you're in the kind of situation we had in Washington.
Thank you for your comments. Are there any other comments for the good of the order? With that, I will adjourn this meeting of the Elections and Rules Committee. Thank you, committee.